Deputy Mayor Ron Akin, thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure.
So 2020, obviously, has been dominated by COVID-19. So maybe we should start off by, you know, hearkening back to March in Sackville and talking about how that initial lockdown affected the town.
To go back, it was March 13th when everything locked down. And for the town, that meant we had to do a lot of fairly complex things in a big hurry. We had to essentially develop an operational plan for COVID about, you know, how we were going to conduct the town business and so on. We had to start working with Mount A about getting the students here safely, both for themselves and for the rest of town. So we developed that Mount A community bubble. We had to do the council meetings virtually, which I guess, as people will remember, took a couple of months to sort out all the glitches, but I think we got it down pretty well after a couple of tries. So it's all sorts of things, and it's been, I think I should congratulate the staff of the town too, because it was just a Herculean effort to do all this. Any one of those things would have been difficult to do, but put them all together, and it took a lot of effort on the part of a lot of people.
I often marvel at Michael Beal, because he's the town treasurer, but he's also basically the town AV guy. Like he sort of handles that Microsoft Teams and the stream on YouTube, and he sort of makes that all work.
Yeah, Michael's wears a lot of hats from time to time, and he's and I think just on the financial front, he's been just superb at organizing the finances of the town. And you'll see, like you saw from the last council meeting, we had a pretty good surplus last year that we were able to put into various reserve funds, which are essentially rainy day accounts. And as I pointed out in the meeting, I think this year was pretty good. I think next year might be a real challenge to handle, because all the debts are going to start coming due for the province, and their general habit is to download stuff to the municipality. So we're wary. We have our eyes open for that. But Michael's done such an excellent job of handling the money that we're in really quite good shape. Mm-hmm. And the other person I'd like to mention is Jamie Burke, who was, when all this happened, was actually, he was a CAO, and he was a senior manager of corporate projects. So he was wearing two hats at the same time, two full-time jobs, essentially. So, and he really pulled that off quite well.
Now, we've been in and out of the orange phase. So since that initial lockdown, you know, of course, we did sort of come out of it to a bit of a new normal, as they used to call it. But since then, we've been in and out of orange phase restrictions twice. What kind of impacts have you noticed and heard about from Sackvillians?
Well, I think there's, the people in town have handled it really quite well. I'd note that we've had one case of COVID in town since March, and that was travel related, and the student was a student who isolated, and as far as I know, showed no symptoms, and went through a regular quarantine period, and it was fine. So, in effect, we've had no community-based cases in town, and I think that's in large part due to the quite good adherence to all the protocols that have been established by the medical people, by people in town. I mean, it's rare to see someone in town without a mask on now. And the distancing has been well done. So I think we can congratulate ourselves on pulling that off. There's a general frustration with, you know, obviously having to do it and Christmas being so disrupted for people. But I think people generally have the idea that it's there's a greater good involved here, and if we can suffer through the next couple of months of some restrictions, then things are going to get a lot better.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me one of the biggest effects or impacts has been that with the border closure, because we're so tightly associated with Amherst, lots of people are back and forth. Some people live here and work there, or live there and work here. Having that Atlantic bubble, I guess, really made a big difference in terms of easing things up. And now, of course, the bubble has burst somewhat, and we're back to limited travel into Amherst. Do you have any idea or any sense that border might be reopening?
Well, it's obviously going to reopen at some point.
Yeah.
But I'm of two minds whether it'll be very soon or not. Because, I mean, our cases are quite low in New Brunswick, and I think they're coming down in Nova Scotia. But the problem is what happens in January. Because we're going to go through the Christmas season, and we saw a bump after our Thanksgiving. The Americans are certainly seeing a bump after their Thanksgiving. So after the Christmas holidays, we might see a bump in cases again. I mean, we could well go back to orange for a couple of weeks in January. But, no, it's been a major impact, and I think it's, I mean, we have essentially Amherst and Sackville for people doing shopping and so on, or kind of, you know, they come here and we go there. It's helped in a way with, I think, people buying local because it's just too much hassle and disruption to try and move around too much. So I think it's a lot of businesses in town have benefited from that. It's very difficult to tell, you know, exactly what the economic benefit is, but the sense you get is that a lot of people are buying local these days. But it's just a lack of convenience. And I think when the border was first closed, there was considerable confusion over the rules around it. I think if there's any place the province fell down a bit was on making that very clear from the beginning. So, you know, did you have to get a piece of paper to cross or didn't you, or did it make any difference? And I know I got the travel document that said, you know, you're going for a legitimate purpose. And I was... Every time I came up to the border checkpoint there, I would just wave through. And nobody ever, in the number of times I went over there, when they required that little registration, was I ever checked. So it was, I think people were kind of wondering just what the rules were and, you know, what they were up to. So so if they try that again, I don't know if they'll do that kind of border closure again. I would like to see the bubble reestablished, but again, that's we'd have to leave that to the medical professionals that know, you know, what sort of what all the models are and what they're telling us as far as, you know, spread of the virus.
Mm-hmm. Now, back when, before the Atlantic bubble, Mayor David Cogan of Amherst and then Mayor John Higham of Sackville actually met at the border, and the fact that, you know, up until, I guess, September, we had a mayor who recently stepped down. And so now you've assumed the duties of the mayor as deputy mayor. That is all related to COVID in a way, because we were supposed to have an election back in May that got postponed. Talk a bit about what happened there and what will be happening.
Yeah, well, I mean, they wisely postponed the election in last May, and it's going to be this May 10th or 11th. I forget the exact date. What the rules will be around that election, I don't know. Certainly, they can control quite closely how we do the voting. But I'm wondering I think all people who are considering running for office, what will be the rules around campaigning? You know, do we go door to door? Do we risk it? I think if the pandemic hasn't slowed by April, then going door to door is probably a very bad idea, because it's a guaranteed way to essentially spread things around.
Yeah, that will be interesting. It's interesting you mentioned about campaigning, because I find that amongst the people that I know in Sackville, there's different levels of concern and worry over certain protocols. So I can see some people appreciating a knock on the door, while others would be quite horrified at a knock on the door. So mm-hmm. That's going to be a challenge for candidates, I think.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know how you get around it. And I think it'll all depend on what the state of the pandemic is at that point.
Mm-hmm.
If we haven't had a case for a month in New Brunswick, well, then it makes it a much easier decision.
Mm-hmm.
If there's still a steady trickle of, you know, one and two and three cases a day, then it's going to be more of a problem. And you have to remember, too, that the rules surrounding the election and the campaigning don't just apply to Sackville. So they have to develop something that applies to the whole province. So if there happens to be an outbreak in Moncton or Edmundston or Fredericton, then that will be taken into account when they do the rules around campaigning, and that'll trickle down to an effect on places like Sackville that don't have cases.
Mm-hmm. Now, this year we lost two members of council. We have now two retired spots, I guess. I guess there will be, I guess, some competition coming up in this May election. It won't be sort of a full slate of incumbents. There, you know, likely we'll see some new entrants into the race, I guess.
Oh yeah, yeah, for sure. The second time I ran for council, I think there were 20 candidates in the running, and it was it was, you know, really a lot of people doing it. People say, oh well, John Higham and Joyce O'Neill are retired or resigned, so there's two positions available on council the next time around. That's what I've heard from people, and it's not true. There are 8 positions available on council plus the mayor. So it's, every time we have an election, it's effectively the incumbents often get reelected, but in effect, it's a new council.
Mm-hmm.
So people can, I don't know if you've been here for a municipal election in Sackville, but you can vote for up to 8 people for council. So you can vote 8 times. I don't know how many people will want to run. I think it might be an idea to have some sort of either online advice or not quite counseling, but information session for those that want to run, because there are lots of things about the job that people don't realize what's involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so to have, I think, current counselors, express their opinions on the job might be helpful for some people that would be considering running.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an interesting suggestion. I've noticed that, you know, in some other places I've lived, the authorities may have like a campaign school or sort of introductory sessions to let people know. And that's like mainly a way to increase the diversity that you end up seeing, taking mm-hmm. the step and actually running, because it, you know, you need to sort of demystify and say, okay, well, here's what the job actually is. Yeah.
Exactly.
The job of mayor and councillor are, you know, they are largely volunteer roles. Are they not?
Well, we get an honorarium for doing it. And there's considerable discussion about whether we get enough or not. But no, we get a regular, you can call it a paycheck, I guess, mm-hmm. for doing the job. Councillors get between 7,000 and 8,000 a year. The deputy mayor gets an extra 2 on top of that, and the mayor's job is about 14 a year.
Right.
People say to me, you know, well, how many hours a week do you work? Well, it really depends on the, I know as acting mayor, I'm doing more than twice as much than I did as counselor. There's some weeks when you don't do much at all, and there's some weeks you're spending 30 hours at it. So it's quite irregular. I mean, around budget time, we spend a lot more time on it. In midsummer, not as much. So it's quite variable, and it's hard to, I would say on average, it's about a 20-hour-a-week job, maybe, if you're doing it. If you're doing everything you should be doing. One thing I would say to anybody thinking of running is the amount of reading you have to do. And nobody realizes that, but there's always reports and papers coming down. And like right now I'm reading, I've got right in front of me on my desk about 300 pages of various things I have to go through. So there's that's one aspect to it that really people don't realize, is the amount of just sitting at a desk and reading things you have to do.
You're tuned to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM in Sackville. We're in conversation with Sackville Deputy Mayor Ron Aiken. We would be remiss not to sort of go back before COVID, if we can remember that far back. but there was a crisis brewing in Sackville in 2020, even before COVID came. Can you remind listeners what happened in February with the Sackville Hospital?
Oh yeah, well the health authority Horizon and Vitalite, pretty much I think on their own. This is as I deal with the provincial politicians more and more, I get the impression that they really didn't know what was happening, and they came down with they suggested reforms, which I would put in big quotes, which for us entailed cutting acute care beds, turning them over to long-term care, and cutting the hours of our emergency department. And we had, the biggest protest I've ever seen in Sackville. Was hundreds of people showed up for two protests at the hospital. And we managed to convince, both through that and through, at the time, John Higham talking to the people in the province, that these were really badly considered reforms. And the province, I'll give the premier credit on this one. He jumped on it really quickly and said, okay, it's not going to happen. It doesn't make sense. There's not been enough consultation. And so now we've been positioning ourselves pretty much since then. We've had I know people realize, but there's the six communities that were affected by these reforms. The mayors and CAOs and deputy mayors have been on phone calls and Zoom meetings pretty early on. It was every couple of weeks. Now it's sort of monthly, about how we're going to position ourselves to, you know, essentially fight any changes, or not fight, that's the wrong word, to have a say in what changes might happen to the healthcare system, because they seem to think, well, there have to be changes somehow, because it's their metrics tell them it's not working very well. And so we're just trying to, right now, the new Minister of Health has asked for a view of what the hospitals in every community should look like. And I'm in the process right now of writing that. It's a brief vision statement, which is, I'm supposed to sum up the Sackville Hospital in a couple of pages. But what we think it should look like. So I'm putting something together that I'll circulate among the group that was sort of got together to deal with these reforms they suggested, and then hope we'll have to send it in by the end of the year to the minister. But it was it's been a major problem, and the major question I ask, and I've never really got a complete answer, is what problems are they trying to solve? There's all the problems that the minister in her letter to me and to the rest of other mayors asked. Most of the questions she asked are not about healthcare, which surprised me. They're about long-term care. And I think we do ourselves a disservice if we don't separate those two. Because the long-term care people that are, you know, they call them bed blockers, are in the hospitals. That's not a healthcare problem. That's a long-term care problem. And if they solve that one, along with the problems with waiting times and all that in hospitals, will largely take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying, like, they have to sort of direct the solution at the actual problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And they say, I mean, and I got a pile of statistics from the health department I'm still trying to work through, but how they were judging the performance of our especially our emergency, was at best odd, because they would say that, okay, how many people are using emergency? And they said there was, you know, 2 to 3 people on average in Sackville overnight in emergency, which I think you talk to anybody in emergency, is ridiculous. There's always more than that there. And what they were doing is they count people when they check into emergency, and they divide the day up into, you know, from up until midnight, then midnight till 8 in the morning. So if you checked in at 11:30, if 5 people checked in at 11:30 and were there until 6 in the morning, and one person checked in after midnight, they would say there's one person in the emergency, not 6. So it's you know, we had to sort of really take a good, careful look at how they were gathering these data and see exactly what they were using. So it's a big problem, and it's really quite confusing sometimes the way they're trying to work it out.
Right. Everyone wants quantifiable evidence, but I guess the big question is how, like, the decisions you make and how you quantify things really affect that evidence, I guess.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. How you count things. Yeah.
Yeah. And before I retired from Mount A, I used to teach a course in a biology course in statistics. And I read what they're doing, and it mystifies me sometimes. I have no idea how they're doing what they're doing.
Mm. And can we expect, I mean, before COVID happened, there was, you know, a plans afoot for a health summit. Is something as ambitious as that going to be happening in 2021, do we think, or some, you know?
Yeah, there will be something.
Yeah.
Now, what it is, we don't know. The six mayors of the affected communities asked if we could have a role in setting up what that consultation looked like. And that apparently is not going to happen. So we'll have to wait and see what the Minister of Health comes up with. But there will be some sort of consultation. The Premier promised that he would come around to the six communities personally and talk to us about it. And that seems to have fallen off the radar. I don't know if he's going to do it or not. But the minister will certainly be around and probably bring, you know, deputy ministers and so on to talk to us. Now, we've already had I went with the mayor of Perth Andover and the mayor of Rogersville. We went to have a meeting with the deputy minister in last July. And it was, you got the impression from them that the nature of the reforms that were proposed in February were really off the table. That was just, I think, too embarrassing for them. So they're stepping away from those, I think. And we'll have to see what they come up with after, and if they actually listen to us when we're talking to them. The minister has said that the reforms that were proposed are currently not on the table, which gives me a little bit of leeriness about it, because she said currently not on the table. Will they come back is the question. And so I think we have to be on guard to fight that sort of thing.
So we've covered some issues with the hospital and the COVID-19 lockdown issues that the town has had, postponed election. Is there any other, I don't know if we'll call them highlights, the good, the bad, and the ugly from 2020? Anything else that you wanted to mention?
Well, I'm putting together a sort of an online message for people in lieu of our mayor's levy this year, which won't be held because of obviously the COVID. But there's several things, a lot of things happen in town that people don't realize and don't, because they just, you know, people do their work, they go about, you know, doing things, and we don't publicize it. There's the ongoing study about the flood preparations and protection measures. They're doing a study on dikes, which is oddly does not include the dikes around Amherst or Sackville, so I don't know what they're going to come up with on that. The Climate Change Roundtable has been very active, and we've got a proposal in now to the Environmental Trust Fund to hire a climate change coordinator for the town for a two-year grant, and that'd be a grant from the ETF, the Environmental Trust Fund, and that is that won't cost the town anything. Again, the Hospital Steering Committee was very active initially when the so-called reforms were put in, and it's probably going to gear up again because we're going to get back into the hospital problem. We created the COVID task force. We had Exit 506. A few years ago, some citizens proposed we, you know, clean up that area and make it a kind of a second entrance to Sackville, and we did a repaving and installed services for a potential development there. The fire department has now set up a training facility, and I'll say that's the nice thing about that training facility. It's been done largely with the money supplied by the firemen themselves, so it's been from their volunteer fund that they raise money for. We hired a new CAO. We hired a new senior manager for corporate projects. So those are two big jobs that were dealt with. And we just, as of the meeting on Monday night, we have a new superintendent of public works, which is Michelle Sherwood. And so it's been a lot of activity going that I don't think people realize. are aware of. I mean, we'll make it, something will come up in a council meeting and just you vote on it, it goes by, but that doesn't reflect often the amount of work involved in getting it to that point.
So a busy year.
It's been a very busy year, and I would give staff a big thumbs up because they've managed to do all this. All this work has got done in the background of COVID. So so it's been really quite good, and the town's in good shape, I think, right now. Financially, we're in great shape. Pending what happens next year, we'll have to see. But as of now, we are we have a lot of money in reserve, and we are we've applied for more to get more from the province to cover our COVID costs. So we'll just see what happens with that.
Deputy Mayor, heading into 2021, do you have any resolutions on the horizon?
Well, I was joking with my wife there that I don't generally make New Year's resolutions because I'm so bad at keeping them. I said if I'd kept my previous resolutions, I would have lost about 700 pounds by now. that hasn't happened. No, I think I personally, I'm in a funny position because I'm acting mayor. I'm doing the job, but I've not been formally voted as mayor. So I don't feel I have a mandate to do too much without going through another election. For that, I think if we can just sort of keep the lights on, keep the doors open, and make sure all the basic services get done properly, like from now on, hate to say it, but snow plowing and all that kind of thing, that would be hitting, because we only have, if you think about it, we only really have four functional months until the election, because after we're sort of mandated not to do anything really radical or major in the last month of the current council. They tell the province, and the Local Governance Act tells us, don't start doing major changes when you're have 1 month left.
No big decisions in April.
No, and it would be unfair to a new council to saddle them with a decision they might not want to deal with. So I think from my point of view, it's I have ideas about things I'd like to see, but I think until I might have a mandate to do something like that, it's not. It's really just a matter of, like I say, keeping the lights on and keeping things moving. And I should mention too that people think I realize the job of mayor is actually. In a way, you have more power as a councillor because you have a vote, and the mayor doesn't vote, and so the mayor is kind of the face of the town. But it's in terms of getting things done and sort of actual things you can, like I say, vote on, which is really the source of the power for a council. The mayor is somewhat restricted. We have what John Higham used to call a weak mayor system. Some municipalities, not necessarily in New Brunswick, but if you look, especially across the states, have what they call the strong mayor system. And essentially, the mayor governs what happens. He says, this will happen, that will happen, and it does. We have a very different system than that. Mm-hmm. I can't, if I stood up and said, we have to do it this way, I just get laughed at, I think.
You're a figurehead as much as a politician, I guess.
Yeah, in many ways. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of the, in a way, it's a lightning rod for anything that's any controversies and so on.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, Deputy Mayor Ron Aiken, thank you for joining us today. I want to wish you a happy new year.
Well, same to you and to everybody. Have a safe one, and hopefully next year we can be back to some semblance of normal.
Yes. Fingers crossed. Thanks for tuning in to this special year-end edition of Tantramar Report. Tomorrow at the same time, Meg Cunningham talks to MLA Megan Mitten. Up next is Front Burner. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.